going to school, they have to think about what time the kids are coming back home. So over there, it's a different story. Kids go to school and they get back. If mom is home or he's not there, it's okay. So day in Rwanda, it's different than here. And most of people, excuse me, most of people, when they get, after the farming, most of them, they get that together and then they start talking. Most of the time, the women are the one who are in charge for most of the home work, make sure the kid get the food, make sure the food is served, and so on, so on. And the husband, he's in charge of making sure he's providing to the family. So that's most of the day life in family over there in Rwanda.
And there are some big families, too, compared to the family size here.
Yes, here most of families have like one, two, three children. But over there, some family have this small house and have like six, seven, nine kids. And some of them, some of the kids. So the government have provided primary school to be accessible to all children. And then when you get to high school, it's not accessible like it was in a primary school, because in high school, people have to pay, and most of some families, especially in the rural, they don't have that much money to afford for the schools for the student, for their children. So sometimes it's tough for them. So, but the government have been encouraging families to try their best to put kids to any school.
Yes, it would be easy to feel like you needed them in the fields to help with the farm labor.
Yeah, usually that's what happens. Like, because if they don't have money to pay for high school, some families take their kid with them to go help them farming.
Start working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rwanda is equatorial, but so you would think it would be really hot, but the temperatures are always lovely due to the elevation there. And the highest peaks are found in the Virunga volcano chain in the northwestern part of the country. Their highest point is Mount Karisimbi, sorry. And that's at 14,787 feet. That's to be compared with our highest point in the state, Mount Katahdin, is only 5,270 feet.
Yeah.
So that's really, you're talking mountainous terrain, kind of jungly mountainous terrain for the most part. There's also savanna and several different ecosystems in this very small country, very beautiful
yes.
small country. But I think that when a lot of people think of Africa, they think of very hot. And Rwanda is just lovely all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, even when it's raining, people can still be. You can take off your shirt and then you can still walking.
More like showering.
Yeah, like sometimes those people who are farming when it's rain, they can still farming, and it doesn't bother them being there because it's really warm.
Yeah, here cold and wet can really be tough. But there, wet. You're just wet.
Yeah, here when it's a cold season, it's really cold. I remember when I moved here, they said it's cold, and then I can see people are putting on this big jacket, and sometimes I will just take this small jacket and then walk around, and then I start running how it's really getting freezing, and then I start running how to take care of
layers. It's all about layers.
Yeah.
You really do have to learn, though. We have all kinds of tricks, like sticking our scarf in the sleeve of our coat. People don't come knowing that. You just
Over there, don't think about these big jackets.
No.
So you just put on jacket or sweater, and then you're all set.
I love that. So, Mike, can you describe for us what a day in the life of a coffee grower looks like? You talked about people get up, they go out without even having breakfast, and they go to their fields. Now, are the fields close to their homes?
Yeah, most of them are so because it's a small country, when we say farming, it's not someone who owns big scale farm.
This is not agribusiness.
No, it's substantial.
Yeah, subsistence.
Yeah, subsistence. Mm-hmm. So most of them, they farming in their backyard.
And backyards can be right behind them up a big hill.
Yes.
Right?
And they have to go up or down the hill to get to work, and they spend the day. So because there is kind of two season over there of coffee, so there is a season, there is a time when they have to work in the farm to take care of the trees and to make sure there is no weeds, there is the trees are well treated, and then there is also another a time where they have to be, it's a time for harvesting, picking the coffee, and then that's the hardest time.
Very labor intensive, I imagine.
Yes, and they have to walk miles, between 5 to 10 miles, to where they have to get those coffee beans, like to washing station, and they have to go up or down hills to get there. And
from the images I've seen, it looks like they put 100 pounds of coffee on their heads,
and then you
walk 5 miles. Up a mountain.
Yes.
That's really amazingly difficult labor.
And then they get there. They have to work hard to make the coffee bean ready. They have to wash them. They have to peel the coffee bean. They have to pick with their hands to sort the different a grade of coffee, and then they have to make sure it's dry and
ready to export.
Yeah, not from there they done their job, because they don't have access on this other facility that are in charge of taking off the husk before the coffee can be exported.
Oh, so there's so many steps to the process.
Yes, but
which makes coffee expensive, right? You have to pay each person at each step.
Yes, so and that's the hard part. Even those farmers do that such hard work, but they don't really get rewarded for that hard work they do, because there is those big chain between them and the consumers, and then that make it very, very difficult for them, because each person in that chain wants to get something from the coffee business, and they forget that the farmers are the one who did that hard work, and then they don't really get rewarded for what they do.
So you are listening to WMPG, and if you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Mike Muenadada. He and his friend Nick Mazeroski co-founded the company called Rwanda Bean, and he's here today telling us about the life of the farmers in Rwanda and the business he's developing. So Rwanda Bean Company was founded on the belief that those that are helped will help each other. And you buy beans straight from the source and return 50% of the profits back to the farmers in Rwanda. Can you tell us more about your vision?
So when I moved here 6 years ago, I know what I left behind. And I'm from one of those people who work hard like that. And then I came here. And I used to go to access on Wi-Fi in the coffee shop to be able to do my schoolwork, and then I can see from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Maybe sometimes in the summer they open it to 9 p.m. People are still working in the coffee shop, buying coffee, like same like people go to bars to buy beer. And then coffee is the country primary export, and that's where it's like treasure to those farmers, even to the country. It have a big impact to the economy, and it surprised me how people are still poor. If anyone who want to earn income have to invest his time, his little rent he have for harvesting coffee, and 80% of population over there live on agriculture. And I was asking myself, why so many people are still poor there if people drink coffee like this?
Yeah, if we're paying $5 for a cup here, how could they be not benefiting from that?
Yeah, if someone is harvesting 200 pounds of coffee per season, and then how many cups are brewing those 200 pounds of coffee? A lot. So if you compare with someone who's selling that quantity, how much he make, and then you compare to how much that person who did really hard work to have that coffee ready to be imported here, I started asking myself, there might be something that is not done right. And that's how I start digging, try to figure out what's going on. And then I realized there is this kind of big gap between the consumer and the farm, that because the farms in those rural, those country hillside, they don't have access the way they can marketing their coffee. They don't have a resource. And there is this complex channel between the coffee and the export and brokers who bring coffee here. And then they forget really that really hard work farmers do. So that's how I wanted maybe just to be the voice, and I launched my company in a way to support them be more sustainable and help them get rewarded on the hard work they do. So that's how Rwanda Bean was born.
I love that. You really thought the whole process through and thought about the people doing the real labor to get that to our cups. You've said that coffee's like treasure to those who do it. And how many farmers are in your co-op developing this treasure that you're importing? And how might this co-op change their lives?
So right now, we have 950 farmers in our co-op. You might think it's a big, but it's nothing compared to those people over there who really need the help. So some of them, the average, those farmers have between 200 to 100 trees to 500, depends. And that's also those farmers, some of them have, I can say, stable life, others still struggling. But this being in the co-op, it helps them have access on washing station for some of them used to pay someone who owned a washing station to treat the beans to be able to sell them, or they have to sell the beans from the trees. But now have access on that facility, it brings the value of their coffee, because now they can sell their coffee to another level. They are not selling the cherries. They are selling now the dry beans. And that dry beans, it's the price is higher than when it's
in its basic form.
Yes.
So you've taken out a middleman.
Yeah.
You've taken out the washing station being owned by someone else, more people to pay.
Yes.
They do it themselves.
Now they
do co-op.
It in the co-op.
Oh, I love that.
And then we export the beans to Kigali, where is there is only the facilities that take off the hacks. And then from there, there is a Rwanda National Export Board that is in charge of inspecting the beans, make sure it's a good quality, make sure is it the quality you said you are exporting. If I say I'm exporting premium beans, they have to make sure is it real premium coffee, because they don't want you to bring the coffee here. You said it was premium and it wasn't premium, so that will devalue the Rwandan coffee. So the government have set that institution of expert in the coffee business to inspect the product before it's exported outside anywhere in the world. So then from there, when we buy the coffee, we make sure we are paying premium price to the farm. And after that, we make sure we're giving back to them. We share our net profit back with them, 50%. We don't give them money. We just help them in a different project. Having that washing station and farming system more sustainable, we help them in different area like education, because we believe that I believe in education, because those farms, they have this small scale farm. They don't make enough to support their children. And those children, we believe if they get educated somehow and access on education, because they had that help, in the future, we believe they can maybe be inventor and do some other different stuff.
Contribute
in the community,
yeah.
Instead of just relying on agriculture. So that's what we believe as the company grow. As our company grow, we believe that we can do more. We help them in healthcare. If I will say it, some of people here, they don't believe it when I say that health insurance over there, social health insurance costs $5 per year.
$5 a year for health insurance?
Yes.
Hard to believe for
one person.
Uh-huh.
And but it's hardly for some of those farmers to afford that $5 because they have 10 kids and each kid needs $5. And if you have 10 kids, that's $50. And the husband and the wife, that's $60. And some of them make under $500 maybe a year. Even some don't get that much amount of income. And to pay $70 for health insurance, it's hard. So when they get sick in that hard work they do, some of them, they can't access on health system. And if we can give like 1,000 back, that 1,000, it's like you can pay for 200. You can pay health insurance for 200 people, and that's a big help for them.
That's changing people's quality of lives and length of lives and ability to continue working.
Yes.
And supporting their families is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you won the Maine Startup Week competition. And I wonder if you could tell us what that entailed and what it means for Rwanda Beans' future.
So I was working on a project here at USM, and I was talking to one of my professor, and he mentioned that there is many startup weekend, and he said you can go there and pitch your idea. And people at many startup week, they helped me, because that weekend when I got involved in the many startup week, I pitched my idea, And it did help me, like, put my idea outside to the public. And then when the main startup week, it gives me motivation that maybe there is something in my idea. So it's kind of where the Rwanda business started. I was already there, but I didn't have, like, how can I take this to another level? So,
yeah, you get a lot of support from other businesses, right, to learn how to build a really strong business plan and how to move forward into the future.
Yes, so it's kind of, they help me bringing my thought to feasible project, and so I can work.
So exciting. Congratulations for winning that.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what your business goal is for the future, say 5 years from now?
We want to be able to provide really good coffee to the consumers, but with people who will be drinking our coffee, we want them to feel like that cup that they have of coffee, it's more than just coffee. So we want to build that kind of relationship where the consumer will feel connected to those farming. We want to build a relationship between that, and maybe in the future try to take some of those coffee drinker back there so they can...
To meet the farmers that raise the coffee they drink.
And then try to expand our company. We dream maybe to be global, not just national. So because of that, we believe if we get bigger, and that's how we can be able to change many people's life back there. We think maybe somehow we can expand in the other countries, because I have to start somewhere. I had to start to Rwanda because that's where I live, but there is so many needs in different countries.
So you're really a global thinker yourself, and thinking of solutions and connections for the whole world.
You can say that.
I love that. It's beautiful. There are a number of ways you can try this world-class coffee. You can order it online at www.rwandabean.com. You can buy some from Arabica coffee shops or at one of the Rosemont bakeries. And you won't be disappointed. It is truly one of the world's finest growing areas for coffee. And Mike, you are a very compassionate man. Your desire to help others is almost your trademark. Your warm, thoughtful, and hardworking style is sure to be a successful combination. I wish you all the success in the world for your growing business. And thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Been really fun to learn about the coffee industry through you. And thank you all for listening. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. And check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Mike Mwanadada. Would you be so kind to introduce the song that you've chosen to close today's program, Mike?
It's called Gender Wonder in Caesar.
And if you go onto YouTube, and I'll have a link to it, has a beautiful demonstration of everything that Rwanda is today.
Yes.
Animals, culture, right. Coffee growers, all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sabes.